the head of SAC, had little prior experience with bombers, and his deputy commander hadn't served in a combat unit since the late 1920s. During the spring of 1948, as tensions with the Soviets increased, Charles A. Lindbergh was asked to provide a secret evaluation of SAC's readiness for war. Lindbergh found that morale was low, landings were rough, training was poor, equipment was badly maintained, and accidents were frequent. A month after Lindbergh's findings were submitted, General Kenney was relieved of command. Kenney's replacement, General Curtis E. LeMay, was a bold, innovative officer who'd revolutionized bombing practices in both the European and Pacific campaigns of the Second World War. Admired, feared, honored as a war hero, considered a great patriot by his supporters and a mass murderer by his critics, LeMay soon transformed the Strategic Air Command into a model of lethal efficiency. He created a vast organization dedicated solely to nuclear combat and gave it a capacity for destruction unmatched in the history of warfare. The personality and toughness and worldview of Curtis LeMay not only molded an entirely new institutional culture at SAC, but also influenced American nuclear operations in ways that endure to the present day. And his nickname was Iron Ass for good reason. Curtis LeMay was born in 1906 and raised mainly in Columbus, Ohio. His father was a laborer who held and then lost a long series of jobs, constantly moving the family to new neighborhoods in Ohio, to Montana, California, and Pennsylvania. His mother sometimes worked as a domestic servant. Again and again, he was the new kid in school, shy, awkward, bullied. To counter the unsettled, anarchic quality of his family life, LeMay learned self-discipline and worked hard. At the age of 9, he got his first paying job, shooting sparrows for a nickel each to feed a neighbor's cat. He delivered newspapers and telegrams, excelled at academics, but felt, in his own words, cut off from normal life, earning and saving money while other kids played sports and made friends. He graduated from high school without ever having been to a dance. He'd saved enough, however, to make the first tuition payment at Ohio State University. For the next 4 years, LeMay attended college during the day, then worked at a steel mill from early evening until 2 or 3 in the morning, went home, slept for a few hours, and returned to campus for his 9 o'clock class. After studying to become a civil engineer, LeMay joined the Army Air Corps in 1929. Flying became his favorite thing to do, followed, in order of preference, by hunting, driving sports cars, and fishing. Socializing was far down the list. While other officers yearned to become fighter pilots, like the air aces of the First World War, LeMay thought that long-range bombers would prove decisive in the future. He learned to fly them, became one of the nation's finest navigators, and showed that planes could find and destroy battleships at sea. When LeMay led a bomber group from the United States to England in 1942, he was the only pilot among them who'd ever flown across an ocean. Within days of arriving in Great Britain, LeMay began to question the tactics being used in daylight bombing runs against the Nazis. American B-17s zigzagged to avoid the heavy anti-aircraft fire. The conventional wisdom held that if you flew straight and level for more than 10 seconds, you'd be shot down. But the evasive maneuvers caused bombs to miss their targets. After some late-night calculations about speed, distance, and rate of fire, LeMay came up with a radically new approach. Planes flying straight went much faster than planes that zigzagged, he realized, and therefore would spend less time exposed to enemy fire. He devised a combat box, a flight formation for 18 to 21 bombers that optimized their ability to drop bombs and defend against enemy fighters. When his men questioned the idea of heading straight into anti-aircraft fire, LeMay told them that he'd fly the lead plane, the one most likely to be shot down. On November 23, 1942, during the final approach to railway yards and submarine pens in Saint-Nazaire, France, the B-17s of LeMay's bombardment group flew straight and level for a full 7 minutes. None was shot down by anti-aircraft fire. Bombing accuracy was greatly improved. And within weeks, the tactics that LeMay had adopted for his first combat mission became the standard operating procedure for every American bomber crew in Europe. LeMay's greatest strength as a commander wasn't a subtle grasp of the historical, political, or psychological aspects of an enemy. It was his focus on the interplay between men and machines, a vision of war designed by an engineer. He also cared deeply about the safety and morale of his men. Strategic bombing required a particular form of courage. Unlike fighter pilots who flew alone, free to roam the skies in pursuit of targets, bomber crews had to work closely with one another, follow a designated route, and stay in formation. The 7 minutes from the initial aiming point to the target could induce feelings of helplessness and sheer terror as flak exploded around the plane and enemy fighters tried to shoot it down. The death rate among American bomber crews was extraordinarily high. More than half would be killed in action before completing their tour of duty. Curtis LeMay was hardly warm and cuddly. He was gruff, blunt, sarcastic, socially awkward, a man of few words, with a permanent frown left by a case of Bell's palsy and an unlit cigar perpetually stuck in his mouth. But he earned the deep loyalty of his men by refusing to tolerate incompetence and by doing everything possible to keep them alive. Instead of asking for bravery, he displayed it, flying the lead plane on some of the most dangerous missions of the war, like an old-fashioned cavalry officer leading the charge. At the age of 36, LeMay became the youngest general in the Army. During the summer of 1944, he was transferred from Europe to help fight Japan. Although incendiaries had been used on a small scale, it was LeMay who ordered the firebombing of Tokyo. "Japan would burn if we could get fire on it," one of his deputies explained. LeMay was involved in almost every detail of the plan, from selecting the mix of bombs, magnesium for high temperatures, napalm for splatter, to choosing a bomb pattern that could start a firestorm. He hoped that the firebombing would break the will of the Japanese people, avoid an American invasion, end the